It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 336, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. You can find this and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcasts, and you should follow us on Twitter, at BYU_RiseShout. In this episode, my brother Matt and I do our preseason preview spectacular. We walk through who we think will win each and every game on BYU's schedule. We make some bold predictions about the season, and we talk about different scenarios and what will make us feel good and warm and fuzzy about this season at the end of the year. But before I talk to my brother, Matt, I talk to Matt Brown of SB Nation. We talk about a lot of things regarding BYU football, but I start off by asking him if he thinks Kalani Sitake would be on the hot seat if he was in a P5 program.
Yes, I do think so. If your historical norm or what your fan base expects is to be a top 40 program, and you have a lot of attrition with your coaching staff, and you suddenly plummet 60 spots after maybe a somewhat disappointing first effort, yeah, I think there would be some whispers, right? Like most coaches get 4 years unless their second and third years are just abysmal. But yeah, if Sitake was the coach at like Indiana or Wake Forest or something, or maybe even a little bit higher profile school than that, I think that there would be some concern. I don't think that that's exactly the case at BYU this year.
Yeah, and why is that, do you think?
Well, I mean, the biggest reason, right, is like if you're in Indiana or Wake Forest or Washington State or anything, yeah, like those are difficult jobs and they have, you know, weird things that come with them, but you can still pay $3 million for a coach. And there's, you know, a good 36 people who could conceivably coach at those kind of programs. And if you're BYU and you decide you want to cut Sitake off, you know, whether that's justified or not, your candidate pool of people who have enough experience to potentially coach an FBS football team that has high expectations and BYU can afford and are LDS, that's like three dudes. And I don't think there's anybody in that pool right now that you could feel absolutely confident that BYU could definitely afford this person, and that person would 100% be better than Kalani. And if you can't, if you don't feel really confident about that, you don't fire a guy in year three. So yeah. Unless things just go completely off the rails, I would be very surprised if he didn't get a fourth year. And given where BYU is, that's probably fine.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. So speaking of off the rails, Matt, you and I before we got on were talking about this. So I'll throw this question at you, which is Merrill Hodge, angry dad. Really good analyst or both in his interview on BYU Sports Nation?
You can be both. I mean, I'm watching all this from afar, and you know, I feel really bad for his kid, but I mean, I can't rake a father over the coals for being, you know, the biggest hype man and cheerleader for your own son. You know, your opinion of your kid should probably be a little bit higher than that of recruiting analysts or impartial third parties. That's your kid, you know, and it sucks to be put in a position then where you have to either, you know, take your dad's corner or take the coaching staff's corner because you still want to be a part of this program. You know, it was interesting and compelling television because you typically don't have that kind of combative guest on a BYU TV, but I thought Bo handled it about as well as could be expected of a student athlete. I understand where all parties are concerned. If my livelihood depended on BYU football being good, I probably would have made that same decision as well. And hopefully he can stay healthy and find a way to contribute some way offensively, because he is a good athlete. And you can never have too many of those on offense.
Yeah, for sure. And especially coming off a offensive year like BYU had last year. Well, the bar has been raised, Matt. Next time you're on BYU Sports Nation, we need you to say something really controversial and bash on the coaching staffs and maybe like take a shot at like the university president or something, which Hodge didn't do.
Sure,
you gotta raise the bar.
I'll just like conference call John Theline in or something, right? Yeah. Well, listen, Spencer, I appreciate you bringing me on here, but what I really want to talk about for the next 2 minutes is Kolob and the eternal nature of polygamy. Let's go talk about that
yeah,
now.
I like going
on that show, and I don't want to napalm that bridge.
That would definitely you might get cut off in mid sentence, which they didn't do to Merrill for good reason. Yeah. Thinking about that staff, you bring in Jeff Grimes. He's got a little bit of a, you know, BYU background. He obviously has been in the SEC, well-respected as an offensive line coach, first job as an offensive coordinator. The narrative that most BYU fans are saying is 2-3 seasons if he's successful or if he's not. And if he's successful, he leaves for greener pastures and a bigger position. If he's not, then probably Satake and everybody is looking for new jobs anyway here in the next couple of years. Is that a fair narrative? Do you think that's how this plays out? Or is that just us college football fans being a little maybe overly cynical about how coaches view their career?
I mean, honestly, that's the standard. And I wouldn't look at that as a negative if you're a BYU fan. If other bigger programs are coming for your assistant coaches, that means you're doing a good job of hiring and developing assistant coaches. And that speaks well to your head coach. You know, the most successful head coaches and guys who are around for a long time have coaching trees. And ultimately, if you're a BYU fan, I think that's a positive thing because that might help produce other potential head coaches down the line. If you have guys that are able to get exposure to bigger programs or to different kinds of programs. So I know if there was somebody that you felt really good about, and especially a guy like Grimes that has a substantial pedigree, who's been successful at, you know, several really big budget athletic programs. Yeah, I think it'd be a little surprising if he was still here in 3 more years. Either he's getting a bigger responsibility, an offensive coordinator position at a school that can double his salary, maybe a head coaching job somewhere, or everybody gets fired. You're right. Like those do seem to be the two options, but I wouldn't look at that, you know, in dismay or anything. You know, either one, it's justified because things weren't working out and you needed to clean house, or now you have a really attractive sales pitch when you're going to go look at position coaches saying, hey, listen, you can might take a little bit of a pay cut for what you might make as a position coach in the SEC, but our last guy was here, won some football games, and now got a better job. And that is a really compelling story when you're trying to find the next Jeff Grimes. Just like, you know, it's a compelling story when you were able to recruit a kid and he bounces early to go to the NFL. Like, does it stink that he left your team early? Yeah, a little bit, but that helps. It makes it easier to find the next guy.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. So Grimes gets hired, and he's taking over the worst offense that BYU's had since before you and I were born. That's obviously
well before.
Well, I think I'm a little older than you, but that's not the point. We're not talking about how old Adam is. We look at that, and he takes over this offense. Obviously, up is the only direction conceivably they can go, because obviously I don't think the talent was as bad as the result. But you've come in, and the story was in January. Well, you know, you've got Mangum, you've got Bohage, of course, who's now no longer a quarterback. Maybe you've got Critchlow and some freshmen that are likely not to play into a decision. Now it's down to Tanner Mangum and a true freshman, which, you know, BYU has rarely had a freshman play quarterback, which is actually true for most schools. Do you think Grimes' position as coming in and trying to be the man for the next 2 years to push this into another better job, is that something you think will affect a decision typically for a coach? Or is this just he's going to pick the best guy at the end of the day who thinks can not embarrass himself in those first 3 or 4 tough games?
Yeah, I think given where BYU is right now, and there's a pretty immense pressure to at least be competent on offense, because, you know, even if this team makes a bowl game and they're ugly and sluggish and, you know, on offense and they're winning games 12-9, people aren't going to buy tickets. The culture around this program is going to be negative. It's not successful for anybody. So I think any other priority, whether that's ego, whether that's a desire for a bigger job, I think all of that gets, you know, is subservient to we have to have a better offense and we have to win some football games. Because, you know, if this team finishes 101st again, there's no one else is going to come calling other than a Division II team, right? If you want to be on the next bus to Southern Virginia, you have to figure out a way to win some football games now. And so I would imagine that's what's going to be the decision. I would guess that Mangum, if he's healthy, probably gives you the best chance to win football games, especially given how difficult BYU's schedule is in that first month, because I think he can do some things athletically that nobody else in that depth chart can do right now. But if he doesn't, I don't think it's because people are playing for what BYU is going to look like in 3 years. I think it's because Wilson actually beat him.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good perspective. Now you look at that schedule. Obviously, at Arizona, Cal, at Wisconsin, McNeese State, of course, will be the nice week off. But then at Washington, I mean, it's a tough schedule. Gets a little quite a bit easier after that. I mean, is this a thing where, from an analyst perspective and an outsider perspective, where you could say they're 1-4 and still a much better team than they were 12 months ago, or do they really have to win one of those games besides McNeese State, or even as an outsider, you're going to say, well, yeah, this is a team that's in big trouble and still headed the wrong direction?
You unquestionably can be a much better team at 1-4. I think it would really help BYU's national perception quite a bit to find a way to beat either Arizona or Cal. That's going to be a tall order. I think those games are both looking much harder than they were maybe 2 years ago, especially Arizona. I'm all in on the Wildcats this year. I think they could potentially win the division. But you know, the stat that we love to use a lot at SB Nation, and I talk about this a lot whenever I do radio hits, is the S&P Plus, right, which measures your efficiency and how successful you are on a per-play basis. And that's where BYU's offense was so dreadful, right? You weren't picking up very many explosive plays, you were giving up lots of sacks, and you weren't getting very many first downs. And so regardless what the final score number looked like, on a per-play basis, you were struggling a lot. And if BYU is able to move the football and they're losing a couple of, 30 to 21 games to, top 25 or better caliber opponents that first month, and you can see that there's some positive momentum, sure, I think that's okay. I actually think that BYU might be okay if they don't even make a bowl game this year, if they're able to then conclusively state, our offense is getting a lot better. We just got out-talented. This is our offensive identity. This is exactly what we want to do. Here are the three or four guys that are going to help us do it in 2019 when our, things kind of level off a little bit. I think that can be okay. It's, to me, as a Midwesterner, what's most interesting to me about BYU this season isn't their final record or whether they're able to beat, Old Dominion and the whatever bowl in early December because they won six or seven games. It's how much can this offense improve, from abysmal to regular bad to average, and what exactly is their identity going to be? Because I don't, from watching them last year, I didn't catch every single one of their games, but from what I did watch, it wasn't really apparent exactly what they wanted to do. They weren't exactly a West Coast team. They certainly weren't running the hurry up that they were the last couple of seasons. They weren't trying to attack people with the spread. We weren't entirely sure what their mission was. I hope to have a clearer picture of what BYU football is going to look like for this season. That's the bigger question to me.
Yeah. So on SB Nation, on the preview that Bill Connolly did, going through the stats and he does a great job. He's been on the show before and he's very, very analytical. And of course, as usual, people calling him out for hating one school or another just because he, uses stats. But one of the things that was apparent to me on there over time, and as I went back and looked, is the BYU defense, which had been pretty good in 2017 and the first year of Kalani Sitake's reign as the BYU coach, the second year took a step back. Now, the question I think a lot of fans back and forth ask, and I think it's legit, and I'd love your response. This isn't necessarily specific to BYU, but when you have an offense that's that bad, do we think that advanced analytics on defense become less reliable because of emotional factors that you can't take account for? That these are 20-year-old guys who, after a while, just start going, oh, crap, I don't know why I'm even trying out here. Because it doesn't matter if I stop them three and out, because this offense is going to turn the ball right back over and I'm going to be out here in 5 minutes.
If you really dig deep into the numbers, I think you can actually parse some of that out a little bit for what we saw as a team during the second half of last season. Yeah, but you're right. And that's why tape is important and that's why context is important, because you can't capture that emotion perfectly, and that's what makes college football such a part of what makes college football way more unpredictable than the NFL. That makes total sense to me, especially at a program like BYU, where you don't have the luxury of, the 85 really high FBS caliber players on your roster. Like, they don't, and they probably never will because of their recruiting restrictions. So depth is always going to be an issue. So when it comes down to week seven and you realize this offense sucks, and if we give up two touchdowns, we're probably not going to win, that changes your defensive play calling because you suddenly have to get way more aggressive and hope that you can hit, you know, get a turnover and give your offense a 29-yard field. And you're right. After you give up that second touchdown and you're playing guys that probably should be in the FCS, there's a huge emotional letdown. And so, like, when I look at this here, yeah, the advanced stats for the defense on the course of the season aren't great. But I would be much more optimistic of that unit returning to being at least above average, especially if BYU is able to get something of a pass rush, which I think they've struggled with a little bit. I'm way more confident of that being an average to above average unit than I am the offense. There's just so much farther to go on that side of the ball, and I think most of BYU's best athletes are on defense.
Yeah, I agreed. Now, a couple of weeks ago, and we'll end on this one, you wrote for Vanquish the Foe kind of the four big myths of should BYU go back to the Mountain West argument, which we're not going to go through your article here. I'm going to give you a true or false, true or false.
Okay.
The true or false, if anybody thinks BYU that independence is unsustainable, they either don't understand BYU's options or they don't understand basic economics.
False. And the reason for that is, I think I get where you're going here. Sustainable means so many different things to different people. And I think that's where we get tripped up and start arguing past each other on Twitter or on, you know, local talk radio all the time. Like, if the question is this economically sustainable over the next decade, like, can you get the lights on in your program? If someone says no, then yeah, I would agree. They don't know very much about higher, you know, college administration. They don't understand the cost structure of games or how much more money BYU makes from this. Like, that I would agree with. Now, if by sustainable, do you mean like approaching the same level of success that BYU enjoyed from, say, 84 to 2009 with, you know, usually being a top 40, if not better program and having an outside chance of more? That's a more complicated question. And that, I think, was, you know, what some people ask, like, is the on the field product, you know, does it have the potential to get much better than it is right now? What we've seen over the first 3 or 4 years of this independence there, that answer doesn't fit in a tweet, but like, it's not like the things are way different if you join the American or if you do something else. Like, and I know that sucks when people ask about this on the radio, and, you know, bless Jay Drew's heart when he called me up and I just yammered on for like 10 minutes. Cause like, I don't think it's a soundbite kind of question. It depends so much on what you mean. And with BYU, it can really could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think, you know, I just get frustrated when people want to go back to the Mountain West, I guess, because the Mountain West to me is not sustainable, right? Because I don't think that conference, I don't know if even some of those teams are playing FBS football in 10 years, right? Because right now there's a bunch of them that aren't making any money, right? And eventually in higher education, and this is a way bigger conversation than I was thinking it was going to be, but eventually in higher education, there's going to be a moment where this bubble bursts. And a lot of these schools, Wyoming, and some of these other schools, I don't know what they're going to do, right, financially, right? Because they can't make any money with their sports.
You're preaching to the choir. And this is something that I've written about on SB Nation. I've tweeted about lots of times. And, like, you know, I saw the viral – I can't remember the gentleman who wrote it, the BYU fan that wrote, like, the more detailed economic look at why this is may or may not be sustainable. I didn't agree with all the methodology, but the greater point of there are definitely some programs in FBS, and this is a way bigger problem in college basketball, I think, but certainly true for football, who are spending money and writing checks that they can't keep cashing forever. And you could kind of do this a little bit when you're going to make $1.7 million a game for being a body bag. Which people are able to do because their TV contracts are so high. But in a couple of years, that's not going to be the case for everybody. And you're right. There are, I would say, half the schools in the Mountain West do not have real fan bases and are propped up because of student fees or because of direct taxpayer support, like the case of Utah State and Wyoming. I think maybe one other one. And eventually, you know, if we have a recession, God forbid, or some other kind of substantial event, you're right. Like, then there's going to be some programs in Mountain West. There's going to be some programs in the MAC. There's going to be some programs in Conference USA that are going to have some very hard questions. And I don't look at this as like a mass extinction event, but I definitely think that we're going to see a couple more programs like Idaho decide to either drop a level or fold up shop. And we haven't seen that, since what, like Pacific, like in the early 90s? It's been a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. It has for sure. Well, Matt, as always, it's been fascinating to have you on the show and your perspective. And it's good to have somebody that understands BYU at a fundamental level, but yet can be emotionally detached, which I'll be the first to admit, I am not that person. I can't be emotionally detached.
No, so. It's funny. I think the longer I do this job, the more emotionally detached in general I feel. Like, I used to just live and die by Ohio State football, which is where I went to school. And recent events notwithstanding, I think it's a little bit less every year. You know, maybe that's unfortunate. Maybe that makes me less effective. But, when it's your job and not your hobby, you look at things a little bit differently.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. Well, thank you, Matt, for coming on the show. And we'll try not to make it 12 months before we have you on again.
All right, thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Matt. This is a sandwich-free zone. No sandwich talk
See,
today.
I can't believe you're even bringing it up.
Sandwich-free. It's sandwich-free. That's all I'm telling all right, the listeners.
The safe zone sandwich. From sandwiches. So I shouldn't even mention that I had a sandwich for lunch today.
You can say that. You can say that.
Sandwich and soup. Sandwich and soup.
Sandwich and soup. I had a sandwich and soup last night, as a matter of fact. Good. All right, so let's start off with a tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
Jeremy Ashton on the email. Was this email? Actually, I don't know, Jeremy, how you sent this one in.
I think it was a Facebook question. Didn't he give us a Facebook question?
Yes.
Isn't he in the face bag?
Yes, and you can do that at facebook.com/riseandshot. I know this question is very late, but what did you think about the new Mission Impossible? He says, seems to me that Tom Cruise and the team know how to use Superman better than DC does. Ouch. Ouch, Jeremy. I did see the new Mission Impossible way late. I just saw it last week.
Do you know who has seen it later than you?
You.
Yeah, because I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet. You should
I have nothing
it.
To add to this conversation.
Do you enjoy the Mission Impossible movies?
I love the Mission Impossible movies. As a matter of fact, at one point, my son and I had a plan this summer to watch all the Mission Impossible movies in anticipation of this release, but we got distracted.
By other stuff, I understand.
We got other movies. There are other things going on.
Excellent movie, and yes, Tom Cruise and company know how to use Henry Cavill better than DC does. That's a sad statement, but it's true. You're not wrong. You're not wrong, Jeremy Ashton. You're not wrong. The only other thing I'm going to say, no Cougars in the news today, Matt. We're skipping right past it, because today is our season preview spectacular.
And it is spectacular, everybody.
It is spectacular. But before I get to
because we've got real football to talk about. Like, it's football. Game week, basically, it's, right?
Yeah, kind of. We're a week and a half away. We're recording this on Wednesday night.
Oh, my gosh.
Less than a week and a half, really. Is it a Friday night game?
It's a Saturday night game. It's but all I want to do next weekend is just sit and watch football. That's all I want to do.
Is that going to happen?
I don't know.
Probably not. But anyway... the only thing I'm going to mention is the sequel to my debut novel. So it's, I don't know what that means. I have a book that got published this week. It's called Wayward Flight. It's the second book in the Empire of the Peak series. I call it approachable fantasy, Matt. Approachable fantasy. It does have a lot of crazy names and stuff, but it's not like reading Tolkien. It's a lot easier to read. So I highly recommend it, mainly because if you buy it, I make money.
Mm.
So that's why I recommend it. But actually, it's really good. If you like Brandon Sanderson, if you like some of those fantasy shows or movies, like the movies, Lord of the Rings, not necessarily the books, I'd go check it out. The first book is Pete Crosser. It's been out for a couple of years, but the sequel is now out. And the third one is available for pre-order. It's called Crumbling Empire. And that hits virtual shelves on October 23rd. So if you're one of those that doesn't like to start a series until there's several books, there will now be three books in the series come October. So there you go. That's my shameless plug. Go buy my book.
And you should have no shame.
I have no shame. You already knew this. Okay. So Matt, here, how much do you want to talk about Marilyn Bohosh before we get to our season preview spectacular?
I mean, love Marilyn Bohosh. I love them both.
So let's do. Jeremy has another question for us.
Jeremy coming in hot. He's got a couple of questions for us.
He sent this in via email.
All right, I thought he had left. He's pretty good on the Facebook, so I thought these were Facebook questions.
So you can do that on riseandshoutpod@gmail.com, one word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. He says, do you think Sports Nation will ever invite Merrill Hodge to be a guest on their show again? No.
I wish they would. I really wish they would.
Why?
I understand that people didn't love necessarily what he had to say, and Spencer had no clue what to do. Spencer had no clue what to do with it, right? Because they clearly weren't expecting it. That's not what they were expecting, you know, and he had to adapt on the fly. And he did fine. You know, I'm not trying to critique somebody who does this actually for a living, right? But I don't think that's what they were expecting. But when do you ever – you never get that, right? But I think after a while when this blows over, you know, especially if Bo goes on, has a great season.
Stop.
I think you have Mark back.
Full stop. Who owns – BYU Sports Nation. What network is it on?
Whatever. BYU.
There's no way the coaching staff signs off on Merrill Hodge coming back on that show ever again. He absolutely destroyed the coaching staff. Called them out. And quite frankly, I'm fine. He's a dad. I get it. But in a way that quite frankly was unfair because his facts were clearly not right. I mean, he didn't even know who Ed Lamb was. Right? And I thought Bo handled it really, really well, the best you could under the circumstances. But there is a 0% chance Merrill Hodge comes on that show again. I'll be shocked.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'll be shocked. But you never know. Maybe, you know, this all, like you said, it all blows over and nobody cares 6 months from now after Bo has 600 yards rushing. Right? Anywho, Matt, the QB race is still going. And I'll tell you what, every BYU fan seems to have a very strong opinion on who should start. Do you have a strong opinion on who should start Zach Wilson versus Tanner Mangum?
You know, I have an opinion, but I don't know if I'd say it's a really strong opinion because I can definitely see both sides of this story. But for my money, I mean, I'd go with Tanner.
I also believe that I have the same opinion as you. But all we've seen out of Zach is a few little windows from practice,
right?
From when the media, the limited time the media's in there, and a spring game that's now months ago and seems kind of meaningless at this point. So I don't have a strong opinion, and I find it weird that fans have not an opinion. I mean, we all have an opinion. But that they have an opinion where it's almost like if the coaches go the other direction, they're morons, right?
Well, especially fans who feel that way about Zach Wilson, right? You have zero data.
Yeah, none. Almost none. I mean, he was a good high school quarterback. So was Tanner Mangum.
Yeah, I've seen this. I've seen this before.
Right? So was Jake Heaps. Right. So was, you know, so was Max Hall. I mean, that doesn't mean they're going to be a great college quarterback, and certainly not.
Max Hall was a great college quarterback.
But that's
quarterback.
What I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Like, it could go either way, right? You just don't know until they get out on the field, and then, you know, and then a player from the opposing team hits them, and all of a sudden, it's like they've never played football before. So you just don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I believe it will be Tanner. I believe it should be Tanner. But if they pick Wilson, am I going to be sitting there thinking we have no chance? I'm going to be sitting there thinking, well, this coaching staff that knows a lot more than I do has decided this guy gives them the best chance to win today. Because I don't think they put him in except if they think he gives them the best chance to win a week from Saturday against Arizona.
Well, yeah, clearly, right? I mean, it's not they're not trying to lose games.
Or this isn't a developmental thing, right?
Like, no, well, yeah. The thing that bothers me are the people, and I've seen this argument on Twitter probably a dozen times in the past couple of weeks. This idea of when you have this choice to make, it's so funny because you see it played both ways. people will pose this hypothetical question. You have this choice to make where you have a senior and a freshman and they're both about the same. You obviously go with this one. And I've seen it played both ways. So you see them say you go with the senior because he's got the experience. And then you have people say, no, well, you go with the freshman because you got to develop him for the future. And I cannot stand the latter part of that. Like, it should never be about – this is – there's no rebuilding year. What is that? Like, we go with this guy because we're going to develop him so that we can be good 2 years from now? Like, so you're going to sacrifice a couple – no, you go with the guy who's going to win you games.
Oh, absolutely.
It's silly to me that people really think about it that way.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't
the Philadelphia 76ers, guys. There is no process here.
The other thing is I don't believe in ruining quarterbacks, okay? And I don't mean that it never happens, but I think most quarterbacks end up becoming who they were going to become, right?
So they're predestined to be good or bad, is what you're saying.
Predestined.
There's nothing they can do. Like,
no,
it's already written in the stars.
No, stop it. I'm saying that the fact that they're played as a freshman doesn't mean they're going to crumble. If they crumble as a freshman, that probably means they weren't going to make it as a quarterback, right? Or if they have a bad freshman year, that doesn't mean they can't be good later on. Like Alex Smith, who I hate to bring him in this, he stunk with the 49ers, right? Because they weren't very good. And he probably shouldn't have been the first overall choice. But he ends up being a competent NFL quarterback, right? When put on a good team. He wasn't ruined by having a bad year. Steve Young, his junior year before his really awesome senior year, was mediocre. He wasn't ruined by that, right? He came and played better the next year. So I'm saying the opposite of what you just said about the predestined. I just don't think you can ruin the quarterbacks, right? I think it's way more complicated than that. And so those that are saying, well, you can't put Zach Wilson in because if he plays bad, he'll be ruined. Like, if failure is going to mean you can't succeed in the future, you're in the wrong business. Right.
Yeah, if you're not going to be able to overcome that type of failure, you have a problem, right?
Yeah.
But I do see that you can press a player into service before they're ready, and it can be disastrous, right?
It can be disastrous on the field. I don't know. There's a lot of evidence that it's disastrous for their development long term because in the end, they're not a static creature. They can overcome that adversity if it's bad. Now, injury being the catch-all, obviously, if Zach Wilson goes out there and gets some catastrophic injury, well, then that's, I mean, but that doesn't mean it was too soon, right? Because that can happen to anybody at any moment.
Now, or the other thing, right? If you look, like, do I think that it was the fact that he started too young and the way things shook out early for Jake Heaps that was the problem?
No, I don't. Think it was the problem.
Do I think the fact that Tanner Mangum had to play so soon is what led to the offensive ineptitude that we witnessed last season? No, I don't think
that either. He played better as a freshman than he played last year.
Right?
Yeah. So
you know, I do think it can be disastrous for some quarterbacks.
No, that's what I'm saying. There are probably exceptions, but we seem to make it like everybody's the same, right? Like if they play bad as a freshman, they're hosed and their career's over. Right.
And why don't we worry about this with other positions? Because I think and I think this phenomenon, to whatever degree it's real, would exist at any position. But we're just fixated on it as a quarterback because there's more pressure on the quarterback. But I think that's true for anybody.
No, I agree. I think people can play bad as a freshman. And the other part is we almost always assume, which is true for I think most players, that they're going to get better year over year. Right. But that doesn't always happen. Right. Coaching changes can affect that. Players' personal life can affect it. And maybe they're
just as good as they're going to get.
Yeah, yeah. You may see the best that they've got right at the beginning. And, you know, we're seeing their quote-unquote ceiling. So, I don't know.
The ceiling is the roof.
That's right, that's right. Well, let's answer a tweetbag question.
Tweetbag.
This is from Twitter, and you can reach us at Rise at @BYU_RiseShout on Twitter. This is from Nicoletto. He says, forget the QB battle. Okay, let's forget it, man.
Let's move on. Forget about it.
Who's the starting running back? He says, Grimes is a run first guy, and I think the biggest factor for how the season goes will be the running game. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb on in, hashtag O line bias. Of course, Nick, a former offensive lineman. Matt.
No, listen, there is no – it's like being a Marine, right? Once you're an offensive lineman, you're always an offensive lineman. Oh, that's why he carries this bias.
Well, I don't know that it's a bias. I mean, don't you think O-line see things clearly?
Well, it's got to be. You have to be careful, lineman. Right? Because I'm a high school, right? I'm a washed up high school offensive lineman.
Correct.
You know,
washed
I'm not
up.
Like,
emphasis washed up.
I'm not a Leto, but
you're not a Leto.
No, and I mean not even close. I'm like 5'8". So, anyway, before we got into that, his question's about the running backs.
Yeah. So who's the starting running back, Matt?
It's Squally.
I'll answer it a slightly different way. Doesn't matter. I don't think it matters who the starter is in game one.
Oh yeah, well, I don't know that I agree with that.
I don't think it matters. In the end, I believe they're going to give a bunch of different guys touches, and whoever is consistently doing the best job will get the most touches. Right? It's not like quarterback who starts. You know, where only one guy plays. You're going to have three or four guys getting touches. Now, I will say this. I'm not super excited about the depth of this unit. I think they're, like last year, they're a couple injuries away from Austin Kafensis coming back from the defensive side and running the ball again. But I do like the guys they have at top. I think there's and Squally, I think, will get the most carries this year and lead the team in rushing. But I don't know if it matters. But you disagree. It sounds like you think it matters who starts against Arizona.
I think it does, mostly because I think Nick makes a really strong point about Grimes being a run-first guy. And I think that leads us to a place where I don't know if I want to use the term feature back, but I think we've got to have a guy who's kind of prime-time ready, right? And if you listen to some of the language coming out of the coaches, you know, you watch these videos after practice and, you know, we're all just devouring all this content right now because there's no games to watch. But if you and we're thinking about and analyzing how the coaches talk about things way too much. But one of the things that I've done as I've listened to that is you listen to the way they talk about the running backs. It sounds to me like they are all feeling like Squally Canada is that guy. You know, Bo, I guess, has been a little dinged up. And I don't know that it was ever their vision that Bo would be a feature back. I think they've got something else in mind. For the way that he's going to work into the offense. And Squally is, you know, he's got the experience, he looks good, and even some of the other players have made comments about him. So you may remember a week or two ago, I was saying, yeah, Squally's not the guy, this is going to be a running back by committee, kind of what you were just saying a second ago. But after listening to the coaches, I think Squally's their guy until he doesn't perform, if he doesn't, and then they'll pull the hook out. But, Right now, I think they're going to start running this offense under the assumption that Squally is their guy and that he's ready to be the primetime back.
I think he is the guy, and I think he'll lead. Like I said, I thought a switch turned on sometime last year where he started finding holes and getting a vision, right? And I think that's one of the hardest things for a running back to figure out is in high school, you were probably a better athlete than everybody else on the field. And so you were able to make up for certain things that way. Get to college, it's not the case. And if there's not a huge hole, it's easy, right? You just run through it. But if the hole's smaller or the guys are closing in on you, can you decide what that first move is and go, right?
Yeah. And he
was doing a better job with that in the second half of the year.
And I think what's been interesting is to see, you know, and I think we talked about this last year, is how some of these running backs seem to adapt their footwork as they approached the hole, and then you know how they made that move into or coming through the hole, and what they did with their feet, and how it was reminiscent of the great Harvey Unger runs back in the day.
Yeah.
And so you wonder what kind of influence he's had working with these guys. Because if you look back, I mean, we could do a whole podcast episode about ranking running backs, right? But Harvey Unger is definitely in that conversation. In terms of all-time running backs at BYU.
Oh,
so that
sure.
is a guy you want talking to these people that have potential. I think Squally Canada is a guy that had a lot of potential, a lot of skill, and just needed to, you know, as you said, turn the switch and maybe fine-tune a couple of pieces.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? I mean, you just don't know, right? Like, That's what I was talking about. This progression of a young player is, you know, Squally looked kind of helpless at the beginning, and obviously there was injuries and different things. And then, you know, what is that piece of advice that gets him to see it differently? And how many reps does somebody need at the college level to adjust to the speed and the defenses that are played at college, you know? And some guys figure it out and some guys don't. And I agree with you. I think Squally will be the guy. Now, I am worried about depth at this position because I think we're three, maybe four deep. And after that, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know that we're four deep. You know,
we may not be.
But I think one more thing that helps Squally that I just want to mention is consistency in the offense. If you look at what's been going on the past couple of years, we've struggled with offensive identity. We've struggled kind of establishing any type of consistency, right? So, and I understand this is really the last shot that he's got, but I think that there will be an offensive identity established pretty quickly here, and that can only help a running back, especially when people, at least the perception is that this offensive coordinator is going to be a run first guy.
Yeah. And Matt, how do you think fans are going to react to BYU fans if we're running the ball half the time, 60% of the time?
Well, it depends which BYU fans you're talking about. If you're talking about the guy that I, you know, the fan, right? That guy that I seem to always be sitting behind when I was a student, who knew nothing about football but was trying to impress some girl next to him. Sometimes that girl might even know more about the game than him. You'd see her kind of roll her eyes like, you don't even understand. You can't even spell Lavelle Edwards. That guy's going to be like, we're running it again. Come on. You know, you got to get 10 yards to get the first down. Yeah, it's first and 10. Like, running is pretty standard here. So those guys are never going to get it, right? I think for fans that understand a little bit more about the game, it's going to just be about scoring points. If the offense moves the ball down the field and gets it across the goal line, I really don't care how they do it. They can put it in a shopping cart and push it down the field. I don't even care how it gets there. Just score, baby.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think in the end there will be some aesthetic questions, right? Just because BYU historically has been a passing team. But, you know, we had a run-first offense with Taysom Hill, and as long as it's moving, I'm with you. I don't think people are going to care that much how we do it.
Yeah, if it's exciting, nobody's going to care. Like, Taysom Hill, that was electric.
Yeah, it was electric. And if we're averaging six and a half yards per pop, no one's going to care.
And, you know, if a good run game gets you in a position where you're setting up like second and five all the time, then you're golden. You're golden. So for me, you don't even need to break off a bunch of big plays or necessarily make the running. It doesn't have to be glaringly obvious that it's the running game that's getting you into the end zone. But if you're setting up solid situations on second and third down because you've got a real run game, that would be a really big deal for this team.
I agree. That would be a really big deal for this team. And
I believe they'd call it a game changer.
We'll take a massive load off the quarterback, whoever it is that is doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Well, Matt, we're going to predict as part of our spectacular, predict every game like we typically do. Are you ready?
So is this the time that's going to count?
This time is going to count.
This
is no longer the pre-preseason.
You're going to put this in some spreadsheet, and we're going to talk about it later.
Well, the preseason I also put in the spreadsheet, but yes, I'm going to put this one in the spreadsheet too. All right. You ready?
Jeez. All right, let's do it. Whew.
All right. At Arizona, win or loss?
It's a win.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I say it's going to be a loss. All right. We're starting off good. Cal at home in Provo.
It's a loss.
Arizona is a way better team. What is your issue? That is a win for BYU. I think that's going to win. Close one. At Wisconsin.
That's a loss.
I agree with you. That is a loss. Let's see here. Spreadsheet. McNeese State. A W, right?
Gesundheit. Yeah, that's a win.
All right. At Washington.
And I'm not so much.
All right, so we both believe at that point they're going to be 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. So actually, I think coming out of that gauntlet's not too bad. If you can beat Arizona or Cal, I think it's not disastrous. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, because 1 and 4 is a very real possibility here.
Yeah, for sure. What about Utah State?
That's a win.
Utah State is a win. A win. You're a big... You hate Utah State.
I actually don't hate Utah State. I like Utah State.
They're fine. Hawaii. Win.
That's a win.
All right. Northern Illinois in Provo.
Yeah, that's a win, but it's close.
I'm going to also give us a win there. That'll be 3 wins in a row. That's momentum, baby. Going into Boise on the Smurf turf, Matt.
That's a loss.
Yeah, I'm also going with a loss there. At UMass, Gillette Stadium.
This better be a win.
Yeah, we got to have a win.
I mean, seriously?
There. We got to have a win there. New Mexico State, win.
Yeah, that's a win.
And then the big one, Utah. What do you got?
I got a loss.
You hate the Cougars. We all knew that. We all knew you hated the Cougars. I don't hate the Cougars. It's a win!
Oh, come on. Sorry, so where did we land with records? Where did I land?
Okay, you landed at 7-5, and I landed at 8-4. Wow, we are way too optimistic, both of us.
Yeah, come on, guys. Okay, let's go back and do this again.
No, we're not doing it again. We just did it. How boring is that?
I want to change my Arizona prediction.
You're saying Arizona is a loss.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you're now at 6-6, but still bowl worthy.
Yeah, but I think that's pretty realistic. I think a 6-win season is a pretty fair expectation for this team. And I'm not saying that should be the expectation. I'm not saying that I'm okay that if they win 7 games, I'm going to feel good about it. Listen, guys, that's just where we are right now.
I think we win 7. I know I'm predicting 8. I just think there's somewhere along the line we lose to a team. Maybe we shouldn't. I don't know if we're good enough yet to not have that happen. And I think Northern Illinois at home may be that game. But I think we beat Cal at home. I think we're prepared and ready to roll. And I'm not sure how good they are. I don't give us much of a chance against Wisconsin or Washington. They're just too good. And even if our offense is way better, I don't know that it will be enough to make up the just massive difference between the teams. But I'll be honest, I
look at this schedule, I see 3 games that are like, yeah, you're going to win that game. The rest of these games, and those 3 games being McNeese State, UMass, and New Mexico State. Outside of those 3 games, I would not be shocked to lose any of these.
I don't know that Utah State's much better than some of those other teams you just talked about, but maybe a little. Maybe they're a little better. We'll see. Last year, they weren't any better than New Mexico State, according to advanced statistics. I'm just saying, Utah State was bad last year. They were not good.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we'll see. All right, so let's go do some over-unders, Matt. You ready to do some over-unders?
Yes.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'm keeping track of all of this. Some of them aren't over-unders. Some of them are actually people, we're going to guess. But, all right, any QB over-under 3,200 yards, anybody, just one single QB.
I'm saying no, so under.
You're saying under. I am saying over. Tanner Mangum. Who leads the team in passing yards at the end of the year?
It'll be Mangum.
You're predicting he's going to start the first game. What do you think is going to happen? He's going to get benched?
No, I don't think that anybody starts every game.
Oh, I think if Tanner's healthy, he starts every game.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's hard as a starting quarterback to get through a whole season like this and stay healthy.
Especially this one.
And you look at the front end of this schedule, right? I mean, he's going to take some hits. And, you know, like, so if he misses one or two of these games, I'm not going to be shocked.
No, that's for certain. The offense has 25 passing TDs. Over, under.
I'm taking the over.
Wow, this is weird. I'm taking the under. Yards per pass attempt, 7.5. Last year we were in the sixes.
I'm taking the under.
I'm going to take the over on that one.
I'm putting together a combination of predictions that makes sense.
No,
but that's,
so far it doesn't. 5,000 yards in total offense.
I'm hedging my bets. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, something.
5,000 yards in total offense. What did we have last year?
That just froze there, up.
There's
on
a
me.
Barometer I want to rely on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we do last year.
Just froze up on me, sorry.
Like 1,200 yards in total offense. Maybe 700 yards.
Yeah, I think we passed the 50 once. Let's see. Last year we had... Come on, Internet. Be better than this.
Yeah, talk to it. That's going to help. The listeners find it really intelligent when
we
you
had
talk to the Internet.
4,200 yards. And in 2016, we had... total net yards was 5,100. It's over. It's an over.
Yeah, you're taking over there.
So let me reset it. I'm going to say 5,700 yards in total offense.
I'm still taking the over.
I'm also taking the over. Your answers don't make any sense.
Your face doesn't make any sense.
4.75 yards per carry rushing for the Cougars in 2018. Over.
What was it last year?
Last year, 2 years ago, because I'm on that page, average yard per rush was 4.8. Last year, I think it was 4.2.
That's a good line you've set.
I've done this before.
I'm going to take the over.
I'm going to take the over for sure. We'll do the over. Even with this schedule, though, that playing some good defenses. Leading wide receiver, meaning number of catches. Bushman.
Yeah, it's going to be Bushman.
All right.
But I knew you were going to say Bushman, right? So I'm like, should I say something else? But that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, so you should do what you think should happen. All right. Over, under, Bushman, and there's three stats here. So he's got to clear all three of them to be over, and he only has to be under for one of them to be under. Okay?
Okay.
65 catches, 780 yards, 5 touchdowns. Last year... Mr. Bushman, this was 2016. That won't help me because he wasn't on the team then. He had 49 catches, 520 yards, 3 touchdowns. I'm going to say over.
What was the yardage number?
780.
Yeah, I'm going to say over.
I think this is going to be close because, like I've said before, this really... I think his numbers get bigger if the receivers are awesome. I know that sounds backwards, but I really think it's true.
Yeah, it could create some opportunity. Yeah. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, we did. Leading rusher, Matt, for the Cougars this year.
Squally Canada.
I am going to say the same.
Is that leading rusher by yardage or touches?
By yardage. Who cares about touches?
Okay. Well, I don't think anybody does. I just wanted to make sure, but my answer was going to be the same either way.
Any running back rushing for over 750 yards. Last year, of course, Squally led the way with 716 yards.
I'm going to say yes.
You mean over?
Over.
Yeah. Defense, 5.5 yards allowed per play. Last year, the defense allowed 5.4 yards per play. So are they going to be as good as last year? I'm going to say...
This is a tougher schedule.
I'm going to say under, meaning over, if you know what I mean.
Oh, no, I don't. I don't know what that means.
That means they'll be worse than 5.5, but it's the schedule. I think by advanced statistics, they will be similar or a little better than last year.
Yeah, but straight up, a straight comparison like this, it's going to come out looking worse just because of the competition.
Okay, so you're also doing under. Yards per rush attempt for the defense, and last year they were at 3.7. This year, I'm putting it at 4.0. Will they be worse or better than that, Matt? I think they're going to be...
I think I have to take the over there based on what I've said.
You mean the under.
No, I've got Squally going for like 800 yards.
Defense.
Oh,
defense.
Sorry. Wow. Boy, don't I feel silly.
I'm gonna say over, meaning worse. Right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Who leads the team in tackles?
Butch Powell.
I knew you were going to say that. Who led the team in tackles last year? Do you remember?
I know he had the individual game high.
I believe that's true. The tackle leader last year was Fred Warner with 87. Sione Takitaki with 79. And then Butch Powell with 74. I'm going to actually go with Takitaki.
Yeah, Takitaki is probably a better choice. I just wanted to say Butch Powell.
So I'm going to say Takitaki. And you're going to say Powell. Powell. All right. Most interceptions.
I'm going with Diane.
Mr. Gunwalaku. Let's see. I don't see interceptions here. Yeah, there it is. He and Zane Anderson each had two. Last year, they were the leaders. I'm going to go...
both of his came in the same game last year.
I'm going to go with Chris Wilcox. So you're
fair
going
enough.
With... I'm going with Wilcox. All right, Matt. So we've done our... We'll come back and visit these at the end of the year. You know, I looked at last year. We never came back and visited these. We were so depressed about the season.
Well, we were going to be so off.
Well, think about it. So last year we had... we did. We filled these in. No, this was 20... That was 2016. Never mind. We had Tanner... At 3,600 yards last year, I had the over. Average yards per pass attempt, 7.8. We both had the over on that. That's why we did come back and visit it. It was absolutely depressing. It's absolutely depressing.
Yeah, just talking about it now is still depressing.
So, Matt, I'm going to skip. Daniel Smith sent us some face bag questions, and we'll do these very quickly. What player do you think would do well playing both sides of the ball this year? Do you think we're going to have any two-way players this year in a significant way?
Only if there's injury, but the player I would pick would be Bo Hodge.
Yeah, I think Kafensis again, but probably only because of injury. What about his second question? How long will Kalani Sitake be with the program? Is he going to stay a long time, or is he a shortstop coach? Hashtag climb on in, hashtag face bag. If he wins, I think he's here for a long time.
I agree. He only leaves if the team doesn't perform.
Correct. I think
this
that's
is his destination. BYU is the destination for him.
Yeah. So Matt, let's talk overall on the season. You think they're going to end up at 6-6. I'm saying 7-5, 8-4 is maybe your best case. How are we going to feel at the end of this season? How are we going to feel about the Cougars and how this season ended up? Last year, of course, was terrible. We felt terrible. If your scenario plays out and we're 6-6 and get it to play in the, you know, crap bowl or whatever bowl we end up in, how are we going to feel about that?
Not good.
You don't think we'll feel good?
I won't.
Tell me more.
I don't want to cheer for a 6-6 team that barely makes a bowl game. That's not fun. I will cheer for that team, right? But like, that doesn't get you out of bed in the morning.
Well,
that get to the end of the season like that, you're like, okay, yeah, I feel great about the future of this team. Like, it's just, it's gonna. I think it'll feel like a downer.
Here's the thing to me. You have them beating nobody that in the preseason rankings that BYU is better than, okay? Everybody in your six wins, McNeese State, Utah State, Hawaii, even Northern Illinois, maybe they are one team that's, as of today, higher than us. UMass, New Mexico State. You don't have us beating anybody sexy, right? There's no excitement. There's no sizzle. in that scenario. And if we go 5-7, say we lose to Northern Illinois, then I agree with you. Then it's a really disappointing season. I think getting back to a bowl game is actually, quite frankly, kind of the bar they need to try to clear this year, right? Especially with this schedule. But I think you feel really good in my scenario. If you're 8-4, I think you, with this schedule, I think you feel fantastic going into a bowl game. Well, would you agree? Or do you think you're still just like, yeah, but we got the crap kicked out of us by Wisconsin and Washington?
I think that, you know, the 8-4 scenario, depending on how they do and who these tougher teams are that they end up beating and what those games look like, that I might be able to get excited about that.
Yeah, see, you got to, right? We won four games. To turn it around and basically reverse in 1 year, that's exciting. That won't that make you feel like 2019's the year, right?
Yeah, except you know, we'll be replacing a quarterback and a running back, and
so what? They'll have a system in place. Grimes, the system guy.
True. You know?
Does LSU ever worry about replacing a running back? No.
Sure.
Because they got another 5-star guy waiting. Oh, is that the difference?
No, actually, I don't know if that's a good example. But, But I think that my opinion, my answer to your question is heavily influenced by the way I still feel after last season. And so does an 8-win season in 2018 wash some of the taste out of my mouth? Maybe.
Oh, man. It gets me. I'm jazzed. If we beat Utah, we're 8-4. We beat two Pac-10 teams in my scenario, Cal and Utah, right? You beat Utah State. If you play, say, tough with Boise late in the year but lose, I think you're feeling really good at the end of the year. I think the coaching staff is probably disappointing because you always want to win more. But it's feeling good. I think recruits, people aren't going to be able to hang over like, well, it's a losing program now type of thing over their heads on the recruiting trail. I think 8-4 is, I think it's as best as you can hope this year, right? I mean, what do you think the top side is? 9 wins? Is that like, yeah, if everything went perfect?
That's like the total high case.
Maybe 10? Maybe you can beat both Arizona and Cal? I don't know. That's a tall order. Especially
but I'll tell you this. If you're 8-4, if those four losses all happen in September, right? And so after Utah State, you win out. I think that's going to feel pretty good. But if you get into a streak.
You mean September, October. You don't think we lose to McNeese State. Or is Washington technically September still? Because of that early
Washington's
game.
Technically September still because it's the 29th.
Yeah.
So if those are your four losses and you don't lose again after Washington and you beat Utah, yeah, I feel good about that.
And but Boise, like, on the road?
But the scenario that I worry about there is you win 3 in a row in October. Okay, maybe you beat Boise State. And then you beat UMass and New Mexico State and you get to the Utah game and you've just won 5 or 6 of your last 6. And then you lay an egg. You lay an egg in Salt Lake.
Oh my gosh, you are like, such a negative Nelly today.
If that happens, I'm not going to feel good about this season.
If we're 8-4, even if we've lost to Utah, I still feel good about this season. I won't feel as good, but I still feel good.
If we're 8-4 with a loss to Utah, in my mind, that means we beat one of Arizona, Cal, Wisconsin, and Washington.
Yeah, exactly.
I could feel good about that.
Yeah, I think 8-4, because of the way this schedule falls out, unless like we beat Wisconsin and lose to McNeese State or something stupid, right? 8-4 is a good day. I think even 7-5, depending on who you beat and when the momentum is at the end of the year, could be. I could feel all right. 6-6, I'm not going to feel great. I don't know if I'm as down on that record as you are because I think you won 4 games last year and you lost the teams you had no business losing to, like UMass, right? And if you turn around and you don't lose any of those games, because you don't have us losing, and that's a scenario, to any terrible teams, right? You have us losing to all good programs. So I think you feel a lot better. Yeah, you're not like celebrating, right? That we're gonna play some, you know, Conference USA team in a terrible bowl, right? It's not exciting, and then you could still end up with a losing season, right? If you lose the bowl game. But I think at 6-6, there could still be a lot of room for hope, because I think at 6-6, you may actually still be a top 50 team, which would be a massive improvement from last year.
Yeah, but you wake up 5 years from now and you're looking at a 6-6 win or 7-win season. It's not going to feel special to you then.
I didn't say it was going to feel special, but let me flip it for you, okay? So when Bronco Mendenhall took over the Cougars, okay, right? And you had, let me pull this up. So when was his first year? It was 2008. Okay. So I mean 6. They went, I'm sorry, 2005.
It was 2005.
They went 6-6. Do you remember that season at all?
I do.
So they went 6-6. I felt good at the end of the season. Not great. I don't remember that season with a lot of fondness. But I feel like if you went 6-6 and 7-5, you can say in your brain, maybe there's a big season coming on 2019. Now, certainly if you go 8-4, you're going to feel much more confident about that. And like you said, you might be changing quarterbacks, et cetera, et cetera. But my point is that I think momentum is the key to this season. And us feeling good. It's not necessarily exactly about the record. It's about, you know, also not getting blown out. Like what happens if we're 7-5, but we play tight games in all of those losses? That'll be heartbreaking, but don't you feel a little better than if you just get the crap kicked out of you every time?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you can be in it against some of these really tough programs.
What if you lose to Boise State 21-17? Instead of losing to Boise State 28-10.
Right, or you're within a couple scores on one or two of these big games on the front end,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. You put up 300 yards of total offense against Wisconsin, right?
Well, you're still in it in the fourth quarter,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. You get past the 50 a couple times, right? The bar is not that high for the offense, to be honest. You know, they don't have to jump that too high.
Yeah, no, I think I could see that. I could perk up a little bit, right? So I think if you can perform and put on a show against some of these teams and win 7 or 8 games, I think you have reason to feel good about the future. I think in a 6-6 scenario, if you've put up a good show against some of these good teams, maybe you feel like you got something to smile about going into a bowl game and, you know, win a bowl game, come out of there with 7 wins, and. You know, that kind of puts a bow on the season for you. I think I could get excited about that, because that would be a fun. That sounds like a fun season to me.
Yeah,
you know, because in these big games, like, it's not over at a half.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know, and you feel like your team had a shot, and so you start seeing some flashes of things that give you promise for the future. And then when you get into the kind of the long stretch of the schedule there, starting at the beginning of October, if you were able to stay in it with some of these other bigger teams, you should be able to really put on a show against some of these opponents.
Yeah, yeah.
That you play on the back half.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Matt, we're out of time. We're actually probably really out of time. But next week we'll be back and we're going to preview Arizona. We haven't really talked about them much this off season, but we're going to spend a lot of time talking about them next week. You ready for that?
Oh, I'm ready for that.
Ready for
Let's talk
football?
About a real football game.
Yeah, that's right. Let's indeed talk about a real football game. And anyway, thanks for downloading and listening. If you haven't already, you should subscribe to us on iTunes and listen to this all the week. And sometimes it's even sandwich free.
See, you went back to the sandwiches.
That's sandwich free, man. I'm not talking about sandwiches or its definition. I'm not talking about it. We're done. We're moving on, man. We're moving on. And Matt, you need to go see Mission Impossible.
Impossible.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it. And you know what your other mission is? To get excited about this football season.
I'm excited to watch some football, that's for sure.
No.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, but you didn't say I'm excited to watch BYU football.
No, I'm excited to watch BYU football. Okay, I'm ready. Yeah. This Arizona game is appointment viewing, obviously, right?
You better believe it is.
Oh, I'm going to cook some food up. It's going to be fantastic.
For 9 o'clock at night?
Yes, you have to. It's the first game of the season, dude. You've got to have game day food. And I know you're going to regret that on Sunday morning. I know you're going to wish you hadn't done it. But you have to do it.
Taquitos.
You have to do it.
I love taquitos.
Yeah, you got to get some queso going.
Guacamole.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. All right. You've got me convinced.
See, that was a close one. You almost messed it up.
Yeah, well, that happens. That happens sometimes. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. We appreciate you spending an hour with us chatting. Well, not really chatting, just listening to us chat, but you get my point. Thanks, everybody, once again, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.